Paul Murphy with me now, the People Before Profit TD, just back from Egypt. Paul, you're welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kurt.
And you're welcome back. Remind us why you were in Egypt.
Yeah, as part of the global march to Gaza, which saw over 4,000 participants from about 60 countries go to Egypt with the plan of marching to the Rafah crossing, which is the point where the starvation of Gaza is taking place. It's huge numbers of aid trucks and so on not being allowed in by the Israeli authorities. So with the idea being to highlight to the world how this is happening and how aid has been weaponized in a really extreme way, if 500,000 people are on the verge of starvation, and to try to apply pressure on the Israeli regime to lift that blockade, to allow humanitarian access, and also to apply pressure to our own governments in the West, which are complicit in the genocide. Obviously, some are very openly and clearly complicit. They provide the weapons, they provide the money, they provide the political support, like the US or Britain or Germany or the European Union. And then others are like Ireland, which have quite good words of criticism and condemnation of Israel's genocide and welcome talking about genocide. But yet, you know, allow the central bank to authorize the sale of these Israeli bonds, haven't done anything about the weapons flying through our airspace and dragging their feet on the occupied territories bill.
What was the expectation when you went out there in terms of what you might achieve? What was it this? Was it attention on the issue?
Yes, I mean, we wanted to get to Rafah and we obviously haven't gotten to Rafah. So that's disappointing. But in a sense, I think one further attention has been shone on this issue. That was really a key point, is to make people aware that this is still happening. It's not just still happening, it's getting worse on a daily basis.
51 people were killed today by Israeli tanks queuing up to get aid.
Yeah, exactly. And this
that
has become
beggars belief sometimes. When you actually read the headlines, you kind of become inured to them maybe over a time.
Exactly. And this is a kind of an accelerating development over the past 3 weeks. So from March, Israel stopped allowing in any food, any water, any medical supplies. In the last 3 weeks, they've allowed a tiny trickle in, but they've banned the UN and all other international aid agencies. And instead, they have their own aid agency, which is a US Israeli joint venture called the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. And they're really using aid as a weapon of war in two ways. One, to pursue ethnic cleansing. So they try and get people to move out of the areas they want to move them out of in order to say, well, the aid is only in these areas, you have to come here. But then two, I mean, this has happened again and again now. We're now at about 350 people killed while queuing for aid just in the past 3 weeks, about 3,000 people injured on top of that. So effectively getting people to line up and then shooting them down. So that's, you know, it's just unbelievably horrific.
In terms of then the intervention that happened in Egypt, talk us through that. I mean, who detained you, how it was communicated to ye, what happened?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, this was targeted not at Egypt, but at Israel. It's Israel that is responsible for the current situation. And there was communication between the various organisers, you know, in these different countries with their Egyptian embassy. So in Ireland, there wasn't any response from the Egyptian embassy. But in other countries, they got a positive response. So there was no indication until we arrived that Egypt was going to take, you know, such a negative and repressive view of the march. And then what happened, I mean, when people were flying in, a number of people were detained and immediately deported. Then by the time I flew in on the Thursday night, people seemed to be getting through without a problem. But then on Friday, it was clear we were being followed, questioned by secret police everywhere. And then basically, there was a plan to get to a certain point to assemble and then to kind of to get closer and closer to Rafah. So people got broken up into different groups. I was in a particular group that got to this place called Ismailia, a youth hostel where there was maybe 65 of us. And then when we got there, just there were soldiers there or police there to take our passports and then hold us there, detain us there, then to drag us away and then to put us in buses and I don't know how long that went on for, and then leave us in the airport. And then something similar happened on a bigger scale at one of the checkpoints where more people were stopped. So about 1,000 people were stopped at an earlier checkpoint, and that included some very nasty tactics like we're seeing during the kind of European, the Egyptian revolutionary movements. So the lights be turned off and not police would be allowed in, kind of hired thugs of the regime to go in and whip people and stuff. So quite brutal behaviour, and hundreds of people detained, some still detained. We're trying to get a full picture. Thankfully, all the Irish are definitely out.
I know what you're going to, I know you're going to kind of talk about, you know, what you went through compared to 51 people being kind of shelled by tanks today, queuing up for aid. At the same time, you wouldn't be human if there wasn't a moment where your kind of stomach dropped a little bit during all of that. Was there?
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly... I'd say yesterday, which is the second time I was detained, because I was on my own and I was in a police station, and I thought, this could go on. You know what I mean? I thought most likely it would go on until my flight, and then you'd just be brought to the airport and be gone.
It's easy to say that in hindsight, but when you're in the moment...
Yeah. But, you know, it is fundamentally that point. It's like, I think all of us, not just politicians, all of us have a duty to do whatever we can to try and stop the genocide that's happening. But I think there's a much higher responsibility on those in the public eye with public profiles, if they can use those profiles to raise awareness about what's happening, to increase pressure on both the Israeli government and governments in the West. And so I think, you know, it's the right thing to do, even if there is, you know, a certain risk involved or whatever.
So will you do it again? I mean, what's the plan in terms of continuing the focus of attention?
Yeah. Certainly for the moment, there is no plan to march to Rafah. And we're trying to communicate that clearly to the Egyptian authorities in the hope that that will result in people being released and people not being harassed. Like, there's Irish people still there who will still be there till the weekend, perhaps. Mm. And so there is no intention to do the original plan. So this phase of that march to Rafah is over for now. But there are other plans. I mean, this was a kind of unprecedentedly international development, you know, 60, or I saw some people saying 80 countries. Was hard to know because you're only meeting the people who are kind of around you.
Yeah.
So one of the next ideas is next week there's a meeting of the European Council with the Israeli foreign minister in Brussels. And there's an idea of having an international protest there to oppose the ongoing European support for Israel.
Well, let me ask you about that then, because Irish government officials will say, listen, we need a unified European response to this. And on the one hand, I get that, you know, we're a member state of the European Union. And, you know, certainly if you're going to use trade as a weapon against Israel, then it has to be on a European basis, because, you know, it's their prerogative to deal with trade into and out of the Union. At the same time, it does give the government an out, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And, like, you know, let's look at who's leading the European Union, who's the president of the European Commission. I mean, Ursula von der Leyen, just, what, 2-3 days ago, again, spoke about Israel's right to defend itself and spoke about Iran being the main destabilizing factor in the region. You know, that's like 20 months into a genocide. Israel clearly starting a war with Iran. It's incredible. And so, like, yes, definitely, we should be pushing at a European level. We should be pushing as hard as we can in terms of EU-Israel association agreement. We should be pushing to create coalitions of other countries of, you know, more similar mind, like Spain and some others. But I also don't think the government can use that to hide behind. We also need to act ourselves. I mean, even just under international law, you know, under the International Court of Justice ruling, we shouldn't have any trade, at least with the occupied settlements. And that's an obligation on our government.
Yeah.
And we think, even the Attorney General thinks, there's a legal argument that can't be made that is within the European treaties, even though trade is European competence, because of what the international law and what the ICJ has said.
But at the same time, do you get any sense that the government are going to make those decisions?
I think the government is under increasing pressure. They don't like it. You can see they really, really don't like it. But all of the protesting, all of the emails, all of the contact, you know, they called it genocide. That does have real significance. And the first European
leaders
to do so.
Yeah, they have gone further than
exactly. And
than
I don't
other
think
member states.
They would have done so if it wasn't for pressure from below. So I think that's what we need to keep up at home. It isn't just about, you know, international events in Egypt or Brussels or whatever. It's about bringing pressure to bear here. I think on those three key issues, the Occupied Territories Bill in full, don't carve out services, which constitute the majority of our trade, which is the government's current plan. The overflights, which is 9 months now since they were first reported. I've been asking, as I asked a leader's question about it about a month ago or so. I've been putting in parliamentary questions. They apparently have a draft report about this since March. but haven't done anything about it. I mean, it's very simple. The airlines say they've carried weapons through Irish airspace. Yeah. That is not legal without permission. It's not
on one level. Do you suspect that the tactic was, or the strategy was, you know, say the right things and this can't last forever?
Yes, that's exactly what I think their plan was. And I think the problem for them is that the kind of time has run out on those things. They were making promises and writing checks that they thought wouldn't need to be cashed because this would be over. But unfortunately, the horror has continued, has deepened. And so
it's
going to
escalate, do you think? You know, when you look, and I know we're moving on to kind of, you know, slightly tangential area, but, I mentioned Donald Trump's grand plan that's going to be revealed later on in all its detail, you know, whatever that means, whether it's an actual plan or just a glorified Truth Social post, we don't know yet. But what's your sense of the direction of travel?
I mean, things are very, very dangerous, aren't they? You know, you could be talking about a kind of full-scale regional war in the Middle East, which then doesn't remain contained in the Middle East. It can spread from that. So this is an issue for all of humanity. And fundamentally, I mean, Israel needs to be stopped. They are a terrorist state. They're acting like a terrorist state. They are a terrorist, genocidal state. But the problem is, the reason they're not stopped is that they're supported. I mean, Donald Trump, you know, after all this talk of we're going to do a nuclear deal with Iran and so on, then just rode in behind Israel and said, we believe Israel, that Iran was on the verge of getting nuclear weapons, when there's not the international kind of consensus of those, the experts who know.
Sorry, his own director of national intelligence two months ago said Iran is not on the verge of getting nuclear weapons.
Exactly. I watched a video with him just there where he was saying, oh, I don't care what you said. They were on the verge of it, which is obviously just what Netanyahu was saying. So that's, you know, extremely dangerous. Obviously, he was elected partly on the promise of, you know, no more foreign interventions, don't be, you know, a kind of more isolationist position. And but, you know, we can't just blame Donald Trump for this. Ursula von der Leyen is also putting this very, very pro-Israel position. And I think we in the West have a duty to put pressure to stop that, because this is what enables Israel's very dangerous actions.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, the politics of all of this can be as complicated as you want them to be, but I think it's worth just kind of reading that headline again to people. Israeli tanks killed 51 starving people queuing up to get food in Gaza today. What they suspected 51 starving people were going to do against the tank, God only knows. But anyway, that is the situation there. Paul, thanks for joining us. Thanks, Paul Murphy, People Before Profit.